Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, where we discuss all sorts of things Germanic heathenry related. My name is Jesse. I am your host. Let's get into it.
The Alvetier Workshop is dedicated to the old ways, offering a wide selection of animist ritual supplies, divination tools, altar goods, and home decor, including premium reindeer hides imported from traditional herders in northern Finland. Whether you're just starting your spiritual journey or looking to expand your collection with a custom drum, we have everything you need. Visit our online store at thealvetier.com and discover the beauty of mountain spirit.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Yes, folks, welcome back to another week of the podcast, another week of springtime kicking in full gear. Hopefully your allergies aren't kicking your butts too bad, but we are in the first week of April. We've passed the equinox. We're just around the corner here, getting reared up and ready to go. We're geared up and ready to go, rearing and ready to go, as they say, for the solar eclipse that's about to happen here. So if you're listening to this or watching this, let me know, you know, down in the Q&A post, if you're listening to this on Spotify, or down in the description area, if you're watching this on the Patreon page, let me know where you're going to be watching this from, or where you're coming from to go watch it. I know a lot of folks are traveling to Texas to get into the path of totality. Here in Tennessee and Kentucky area, it's going to not be entirely, like, we're not going to see full totality, but it's going to be a quite a big coverage thing. So hopefully we have clear skies and optimal viewing for that. So looking forward to that. But yeah, today's episode is going to be a fun one, I think. We've got a guest coming on here today who's been a guest on another podcast or another show that I've checked a couple of episodes out on, called The Integral Stage. For any of you folks out here that may have heard of or know of Layman Pascal, he's got a pretty cool YouTube channel out there, tapping a bit into more of like the, I don't know if this is like an accurate summary of it, but he does a lot of things to do with like esoteric stuff in general, not entirely paganism related or anything like that. But my guest today was a guest on his show in the past, and my guest names today, his name is Brett Bernhoft, and he is a pagan who has come up with some ideas or some ways of kind of like introducing or integrating, as it were, the modern technology, modern things into ancient ways, or you know, a bit of a old meets new sort of thing. He briefly summarized his particular interest, or focus, I should say. If I can just see here what he was saying. Yeah, he had wrote into my email, and he had said that, you know, his particular... Actually, let me do this here. Let me... Operating this one, so he says, my particular focus in the pagan world is the use of modern technologies alongside traditional magic and shamanism practices. I'm also a developer studying artificial intelligence, which would be a lot of fun to discuss with you in the context of contemporary heathenry, or contemporary heathenism, as he puts it. So we are going to be talking about that today. I know the topics of, you know, AI and how it's been leveraged in the future of its use and stuff in our world this day is a hot topic for a lot of folks. especially, you know, those in the performing arts or creative arts sectors, you know, they feel like a lot of what AI does in that area is robbing artists of their originality and all kinds of things. So it's going to be interesting to talk to Brett today about his take on it, kind of see what his take and angle is. He does mention paganism as an area of focus. So don't think he's heathen, but we're going to learn more about him hopefully here in just a moment. Before we welcome him in, as always, just some minor housekeeping things. Do be sure to check out the show notes or description area of the podcast, whether you're listening to this on Spotify or watching this on Patreon, for the Linktree link, all the ways that you can support the podcast here, Midgard Musings as a whole. If you aren't watching this on Patreon and you want to, the link for that is in the Linktree link. But if you go to my Patreon page and sign up for just $1, you get access to the videos. You can come and go as you please. You're under no obligation to return on a monthly basis. But each tier above the $1 Carl tier gives you some added perks. At the very least, you're going to be recognized in my end screen credits, all the way up to getting some cool merchandise sent to you quarterly at the very top Aesir tier. But if you go to my Patreon, you'll see all the tiers that I offer, and see if anything there fits you. So be sure to check that out. And a real quick special shout out to my patrons on Patreon, because you guys and gals out here are the reason why the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast has a video format anymore. I wouldn't be doing the video thing if it weren't for you guys here on Patreon. So thank you so much for wanting to be supportive in this way and watch this as we go along. So thank you all for that. Be sure to check it all out. Anything that Brett offers as well is going to be linked down in the description or over in the podcast show notes. If he has anything that he can be, you know, supported by or followed on any social links like that, we're going to be letting him share all that. So if you do see anything down there and you like what you see or hear on the show today from him, support him in any way that you can. So without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome in Brett Bernhoff to talk about bringing the past into the present and how he finds an integration of modern technology with ancient practices. Let's get into it. All right, folks. Welcome back to the show, and welcome for the first time as my guest. This is Brett Bernhoff. He's located out in the Pacific Northwest and is a pagan, as I understand it. Not sure what kind of pagan, but that's always a fun topic just to get into when you first meet somebody, right, Brett? So welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I have been a pagan, a privately practicing solo practitioner styled pagan for about 10 years now, and most of it has been introduction to whatever resources I could find from local, I guess you could call it occult bookshops in Portland, Oregon, which there are quite a few, to Amazon books. Really, books were my introduction to paganism in general. And then I started having, I guess you could call them transformative experiences. And from those experiences came more gnosis than reading, and a deeper sort of flowing of my relationship to, I guess you could say, my active spirituality.
Yeah, those type of experiences, I feel, are what really shape us into human, like the whole human experience. We're not going to really find those places in ourselves through a book. Like, we might get some breadcrumbs, or it might kind of point us in a direction, but where we truly find ourselves in whether it's a spirituality or philosophy or anything like that, it happens through those real life experiences, I think, personally. So, and were you religious beforehand? Like, did you have any background in any other sort of religiosity prior to finding paganism as a sort of niche or place to call home?
As a child, I was taken to church, and we lived in a cul-de-sac, and the pastor of the church lived right next door to us, or across the street from us, you could say. And the whole thing was going to church up till about the age of 10, and then my parents decided to stop going, and I was able to, quite frankly, freely choose my beliefs and explore as was capable of being done in the year 2004 when I was in high school. And So yes, I do have some background in religion, but nothing binding, I guess you could say. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. That's really cool that you're, you know, because I, you know, a lot of folks that have grown up in maybe a more traditional religious family, whether, you know, Christianity or maybe any of the other big ones, Judaism, Islam, whatever, you know, they don't get the, if they grew up in that, then it's rare for at least for me to encounter people that were given the opportunity early in their youth or early in their years to feel free enough to explore outside of that. It's usually like shunned or looked down upon to stray away from that, you know, thing that you were brought up in. So that's pretty cool that you had that opportunity and that freedom.
That I would agree. Sorry, go ahead. My mistake.
No, no, you're good. So did the, you know, when you were given that opportunity, is that where this whole path for you started into non-traditional beliefs? And then you kind of, in the last 10 years, like you said before, landed in this version of paganism that you're in now?
That is a very essential way of saying how I've gotten to where I am today. I remember there was one particular book that I read as a child or as a youth, and that was a book on world religions. And just to me, the incredible diversity of world religions, like Hinduism, stood out to me as being phenomenally interesting at that age. And I was really, in some ways, intellectually breathtaking, or my intellectual fire had been lit. That's probably a better way of describing it. And then I kind of turned off the reading for a while as I figured out what I wanted to do as an adult. But around the year 2011, 2012, I had some very powerful experiences that changed me forever. And I started reading pagan books again, or at least more seriously. And I look over at my bookshelf and I still have, you know, all the books that I've collected over the years. And it's been a very, I am the same person I was when I first started this journey, but I am certainly expressing myself in a different way today because of what I've learned and experienced and now know to be true and believe and value for sure.
That's interesting. Yeah. I always like hearing people's, you know, transformation story, if they want to call it that, or maybe that's like a one way of putting it, but you know, where they were when they started versus where they are at the time of our meeting, you know, or our discussion. And I've heard different people say it different ways. You know, I've heard people feel like, you know, there's parts of me that are definitely not the same anymore. I'm not the same heathen, or I'm not the same pagan now as I was then. I've even said it, I think, myself. You know, I'm not the same heathen as I was when I discovered heathenry. You know, I had a view of the world at the time because I was learning, you know, and there were things that I was having to essentially deconstruct about things that I was learning about in heathenry that were not the same as what I was brought up in or raised in, or that I had established a worldview on through, at that point, my life up to that point, right? And so, yeah, but that's an interesting point to take, is that, you know, us as a person, you know, like, you're still Brett, you know, I'm still me and we are still we, but the things about what we discover, our experiences, yeah, like it's a different version of us. It's like an OS upgrade or something. Like, yeah, it's still Windows, but it ain't as clunky as Vista, you know, or whatever.
Absolutely. That's a great way. I would honestly agree with you that it is an upgrade for anyone who goes down this path. It doesn't have to be, and it certainly isn't guaranteed to be. But and by that, I mean some individuals falter for one reason or another on the path in their own way, in their own definition of success. And that's a whole other conversation. But I would agree with you that my experience with paganism and magic and the occult and the esoteric and really energy and personal responsibility and accountability has been a substantial upgrade.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when we start getting into these types of beliefs, whether it's a you know, and it, what's interesting is, you know, paganism is like an overarching term. It's a generalization of something. You know, you can be a Celtic pagan, you can be a Kemetic pagan, you can be a Vedic pagan. I mean, you could be all kinds of different pagan, really. It's not specific to one dogmatic view or anything like that. It's kind of an overarching term, but I do notice that any of these, whether you call it non-traditional religions or, you know, a lot of it is based in finding where we are in this whole big scheme of things. And what a lot of times comes out is that we are it. You know, we're not just part of it, we are it. And it's part of our, it's part of the human experience to find that sort of it's a discovery, I think, is another way of putting it. You know, like, wow, this has been this way this whole time, and I'm just now figuring this out, or I'm just now discovering that this is the way it is. You know, it's not like what we've become has changed anything up to that point. It's now we've just become we've become more in tune with it, whether it be through some various gnosis or studies or other personal experiences, right? These types of paths, I feel, open up more of that than other of your more maybe traditional direction of going in things. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you've ever seen that. I couldn't agree with you more. This path is open to everyone. In my observation and opinion, it is the default path of humanity, just paganism in general. That said, it is open to anyone who wants to pursue it, regardless of really anything. You can choose to be a pagan immediately and start noticing things around you, and you become magical very soon, synchronistic very quickly after that.
I want to hear more from you. One of the things you're about to say. So yeah, I'm going to turn it. I want to hear more from you, man. This is interesting.
All right. My journey has been very, very long. It's been a long journey. It's been since I was about 21 when I first started having these kinds of open experiences, these kinds of transcendental experiences that really came from, quite frankly, and I will just say, personal entheogen experiences opened me to the next level of reality. And I'm not condoning, and I'm not telling people to do anything in particular with that statement. I'm saying in my world, those were choices I made.
Sure.
And those were things that the outcomes were spectacular. I was able to, without having, if we want to get down to brass tacks, in all honesty, the thing that really transformed me was when I was visited by three different deities in three different circumstances. Totally irrelevant pantheons, very specific forms, messages that were given to me that were not unique or powerful, but they just remember this. You're on a journey. You're not necessarily special, but you have the potential to become something great. So work on that. Do your homework. Remember these experiences. And I don't know if name dropping deities is important in the occult community, but I try to avoid it. I try to just say I was visited by some guides, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And they told me in words that were silent, that none of them spoke to me actually through.
Oh, yeah.
It was all like a almost overwhelming psychic experience. And so the ways we could go with this conversation are any that you want to take it, but
I will just say real quick, I mean, I'm pretty free when it comes to talking about things like plant medicine and altered states of consciousness and incorporating things. It's a human right, I feel, you know. And people are free to choose what they want to do, how they want to experience certain things, what kind of doors they want to unlock, and what paths they want to go down to reach those destinations. I'm a huge advocate for plant medicine when done rightly. And So I'll just say that much for right now. Right. I mean, I've had experiences myself. So, you know, hearing you talk, I'm like, I think I know where what he's talking about here. It's you know, kind recognizes kind in that way. Not wanting to assume things, but it's conversations like this I've had with other people, and it always starts out kind of in the same way. And then we end up talking like, yeah, man, you remember that one time when you were, you know, whatever. So
I can dig that. I understand what you're saying and appreciate the space to hold truth for that, because that is part of my journey. Books and entheogens in limited quantities when I was younger. And I would say transcendental experiences that came from that nexus and the intention to have. The universe told me very specifically, if you want this so-called toy that you think enlightenment is, we're going to give you something very significant. And that was it was a total breakdown of my reality at first. This was like 13 years ago. I had to go through a very specific tabula rasa event where a lot of my biases and opinions were erased, and I was brought sort of to a deciding point. Do you want to continue on as an individual, or do you want to be lost in the stream of thought forever? Do you want to be forgotten and not make anything out of this life? And I chose very specifically to continue on because I had just gotten started. I had just found the fire that Prometheus stole from the gods, and I wanted to use that tool myself. So I communicated with the deity that I was talking to that I wanted to continue. I wanted to move forward, and I did not want to give up. And so I spent a good decade of my life rebuilding myself. And by that, I mean going through health issues of sorts and all sorts of things that had been suppressed and given to me through genetics and experiences boiled up to the surface, and I needed to deal with all of it at once. And so I did, and it took about a decade. And after I had what I consider a legitimate Kundalini experience, I had a very clear moment in my mind that, okay, I am now ready to begin kind of coming out of my shell a little. I'm able to put these experiences into cogent words. I'm able to relate to others that have had similar experiences, etc. And I can start building communities. That's something that I've been quite active in doing, and put the stuff to use. So that is something that I've done over the last like 7 or 8 years in particular.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Had you not gone through those, had those experiences not, you know, presented themselves. Well, really, you know, the experience, you know, can present itself, but ultimately we're left with a choice, right? And if you had chosen otherwise, probably would have been a different outcome, right?
A 180, a significantly different outcome.
Yeah.
To be frank with you, and to say this in all seriousness, with the weight of these choices are very hefty, first and foremost, but secondly, it would have been lost my mind. I would not have been able to recapture a sense of identity that was useful in this world. And it was that's why I think your statement of having to use entheogens in the proper way is something our society is learning very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think, at least I hope it is, because that's very important.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because the algorithm is doing what it's supposed to do, and I'm getting, you know, more information fed to me that reflects what you're saying and suggests that there's a higher awareness and a you know, we're moving in a direction of like, hey, this is important. People need this. This works. This is when administered, you know, safely, correctly, properly, right? This isn't just everybody out here trying to party and get ripped. There's that dogma. That's I think a big problem of why we're kind of stuck in this rut in a way, or such, why there's such a slow progression, you know, towards safely integrating these types of things into our everyday life, into our everyday society. I mean, it can't be because of the science that backs it up. I mean, it's blatant. It's fact. It's, I mean, people have gone through great lengths to prove through science that there's benefit to the to these types of things in a multitude of ways. That there's still this shadow that kind of hangs over that that is still got a pretty big influence, you know. So, but yeah, it is, and you know, I think too that when a person goes down this path and finds that that is where their path leads them through plant medicine and other such things, and they've had it, you know, so they've had such profound experiences that there is a there is an amount and a degree of obligation and responsibility that those people have to, you know, again, responsibly advocate, but be a sort of guide, you know, not be like this hoarder of knowledge or this hoarder of information, you know, and to be free with it to a degree. I don't know what you think about that, but I think once you've experienced certain things, you realize, man, this isn't just for me. It can't be just for me. You know, I'm a part of all of this. This is a part of all of me. I am this, right? Right. We are this together. So it's like an unspoken contract that you sign in a way when you get to that point, like now carry this flame, share it, you know? What do you think about that?
I think that, there's two things I think about that. One, I agree with you that carrying the flame or the perennial philosophy flame, if you want to call it that, the real truth of everything that we're doing, you know, as that itself is, I feel an obligation, so I would agree with you. And at the same time, I think that the perennial philosophy flame or the fire that is the truth of the universe will always find a way I've heard that the flame will always protect itself. The truths that make up the great mystery religions, the things that we all have touched and interacted with to some degree, will always find the bodies it needs to, or the minds and the voices it needs to carry itself forward as a sort of a,
oh yeah,
like a virus, but a positive virus, like a curing virus, if you will.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree. I felt the same. I want to call it almost a compulsion. Like I've got to share this knowledge. It's like this is the ground floor that we can all work on, and yeah. I've got to tell people about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good observation. You know, yeah, like it doesn't need us to be this way. Like it doesn't need us to share. We're just, I think, I don't know. It's hard not to share. Like it's hard not to want to be just a bit free with it, you know, not carelessly free. You know what I mean? Not just being like, hey man, everybody needs to, you know, consume this thing, that or the other or whatever. Like, I'm not talking like that. Not again, the whole responsibility, the whole, doing it responsibly. But just, you know, being advocates for it. Now you had talked to me, we had exchanged emails about, you know, because what we're talking about right now, like, yeah, sure, I think everybody that's listening to this or when they listen to this and watch it or watch it, whichever, they get the gist, they know what we're talking about. And it comes from a place of ancient perspectives. Sure, there's modern science and all this that backs up what has been known by the ancients and what's been around since time immemorial. But what one of the things you had mentioned to me about wanting to talk about was utilizing modern technology alongside ancient practices. I don't know if that aligns with what we've already been talking about, but if it does or doesn't, would you care to kind of segue into that portion of things and share with us what you've come to think on with terms of using modern technology alongside these, you know, ancient shamanic and animistic practices and beliefs?
Absolutely. And that's, thank you for the perfect introduction to that, what I want to talk about. The animistic and shamanic perspective is definitely at the core of what I feel is important about paganism or at least for me, this is just my paganism. I feel that shamanism, animism, prayer, if you want to call it that, meditation, the basics, the things that really simplify things down that are at the essential root of it are very important. But yes, I have had very distinct experiences. My research has, in my opinion, been pretty conclusive enough for me to put my energy into this kind of stuff that I'm about to describe. And I have had results, very specific results, with some of the communities that I've built and the tools that I've built, where I have integrated in my own practice from the layout of my workspace, which you see a portion of over here, is my altar. I have created tools that are like for divination, such as tarot reading tools, scrying tools, trend finding tools that help you summarize text with artificial intelligence for purposes of divination, et cetera.
Wow.
There are a number of tools that I've built that most of them are just one-offs, just trying to try something different and succeeding a lot of the times. But the intersection of, I guess we could call it altered states of consciousness, human altered states of consciousness, technology and magic is a word you could use as technomancy or cybermancy, or you could use techno-shamanism or techno-paganism. But any way that you want to really describe it, there is a budding community of serious practitioners on the internet today, very, very truly, from all walks of life that have come to their own realizations that you can integrate these tools together and have phenomenal results very quickly at that. I could go into anything that you want to talk about. I have specific subreddits that I've created based on the power of memes alone. I can give you any proof in the pudding if you would like to see it, but this stuff is very real and it's under discussed. And that's why I wanted to come on this program in particular, is because I feel like just providing space and holding space to show that others are interested.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. Could encourage others, really.
Well, man, it's like we're so inundated with artificial intelligence now. And I was, and I see it from so many different angles. Like there's a lot of disdain held against AI, especially in like artistic communities or the creative minds. You know, it's almost like I think some of it is this, they're feeling like there's this like they're being robbed of their creative art, you know, by you know, putting words into a box and then having this AI spit out an image or write a text or something. And it's like, well, look at all this time that I spent having to learn all this, and now it's almost like there's nothing to show for it anymore, because look how easy it is for people that really don't know anything about what I've done to just, you know, pops a prompt into a generator and boom, here it comes out and it looks phenomenal. Do you think that we're at a point now or that there is an opportunity for, like, where do you see that shift, you know, or are you seeing that shift with between people that disdain, like there's disdain for it and they don't want to see it advance and they don't want to see it work, versus the communities that you've been a part of and the things that you've done that have actually been able to find its benefit and use in things?
That's an interesting and perhaps most important question. You're talking about a dichotomy that could be labeled as pro-transhuman, anti-transhuman, that could be labeled as any number of sides of a fence. And I think it's undecided, to be quite frank with you. It's undecided because right now both factions are gathering their armies. They're gathering their arguments, they're gathering their armies, and they're gathering what they're wanting to do, like wage war against their opponents. And that that I see those that are strictly dedicated to the use of AI for everything, and those that are strictly not dedicated to the use of AI for anything. Eventually butt heads, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoy paganism, because it does have its roots in human history, and it's not new really in any way. Animism is the original religion, the original faith, as I understand it. I could be mistaken, but integrating technology and animism into a worldview, I have found to be very peaceful, and to be very like a synthesis of the two sides coming together is a fusion that is so much stronger, in my opinion. It's a new form of, it's probably not a new form of magic. I like to think it is, but it really is kind of a new paradigm of magic, the digital technologies that we have access to.
Oh, I think so for sure. I mean, imagine if we could travel back in time 1,000 years or even 100 years and take the stuff that we have at our fingertips now and bring it back and show these people, we'd be magicians, man. We'd be wizards and sorcerers and mages and stuff to these civilizations that didn't have another descriptive word for what we have now. I mean, they didn't know these things. It wasn't made yet. Interesting thing too is I think like a funny thing to observe is people that are staunchly against AI. It's like, man, there's been AI going on for longer than they've called it that. You know what I mean? Predictive text. I mean, I think that's been around since before they coined the term AI. Just all kinds of stuff that falls under that category. It's just how it's become fleshed out. We're using the term fleshed out, but we're talking about technology. It's kind of funny. It's changed. Its form has changed, or it's shifting a bit. It's not quite static at all, really. And I wonder too, with, you know, what's really interesting to me to hear about this is integrating things like this into animistic practices. Or shamanic practices, things that are very almost entirely like nature based, you know, connecting to the ground, getting your bare feet on the ground, recognizing and connecting with spirit that exists in everything. How much do you see that as benefit as it could be? Do you feel like there's a risk in pushing too far on the technomancy or the cybermancy side of things and having those modern advances overshadow or take over the purity almost or the base benefits of these old ways?
I think there's a distinct threat if they were forgotten, if they were eliminated, if they were if it was made the only option, if technology was isolated away from the natural world completely. Of course, we would be losing something very, very, very important. The way I look at, I will say to kind of balance my previous statement, is that I view the world similar to Alan Watts in the way that we are nature, and what comes from us is also natural. It's just an expression of compounds and chemicals and all that. Yeah. But I do feel that we could lose everything if we don't heed the words of the Amazonian tribes that we are now responsible for the planet. They can no longer do it themselves. We are now responsible as Western world, first world folk. We have taken that on, and we have done so much damage to our planet that if we were to lose it,
good luck. We have to blame. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Who else do we have to blame except ourselves? That's right. For that? So you've entered into this, approach in your paganism, and then I've have shared this with others from the sounds of it, where there's this integration of a healthy integration, right? That you found this beneficial blend of the two. So can you walk us through some examples of that? I know you mentioned before, right, like divination and I think, and I'm not going to say it exactly, but and you can correct me and kind of walk me through, but something about predictive text or text into something for divinatory purposes, like with tarot readings. I'm losing a little bit of the details, but if you could we come back to that specifically? Because I'm kind of intrigued and interested on what you found with that.
Sure. Yes, I would say probably the most relatable example is the tarot readings app, I guess you could call it, that I built for a computer. It's not for a cell phone. It's for a computer web interface. And you can set it to do one, or you can set it to do 500 million tarot reads in a second. And it will do 500 million tarot reads in a second, kind of thing. Maybe not specifically 1,000 milliseconds, but it will do tens of millions of tarot reads very, very, very quickly, and then give you a summary of the average cards and their placement as an example of what you can do with this application. That's just one approach, and that's just doing an unusually high number of tarot readings and then summarizing the whole of it. Or you could use a tool that I built for a group of occultists in a forum, which I can share a link to if you'd like me to. The name, I don't know, do you mind if I share the name of their community? You are muted.
Sorry about that. I did mute because I wanted to let you talk. Yeah, that's totally fine. Please, anything that gets shared here for the listeners and viewers, as long as you have freedom to share and can point to, you know, for people to check it out, then by all means, please do.
I believe the website is moneyritual.online is the website, the little dinky website that I built just to try it out. They love it, and it seems to be working for them because they keep coming back according to the analytics. So,
Analytics
don't lie. But my larger point when it comes to the tools that I've built are that I'm building the tools myself, and that is a level of craftsmanship that I encourage anyone who wants to get into technomancy to take seriously, because building the tools yourself is a whole other game instead of just using the tools, which is part of the game itself for any form of paganism is the tools. I would say building the tools has been very interesting to me.
That is really interesting, man. I'm heathen, right? So my particular, which is paganism. I mean, it's, you know, the heathens were pagans. They, you know, the Germanic tribes, they were polytheistic or henotheistic at the very least. But what's interesting is as we're talking about this, I recently came across the runes are a big thing for heathens, right? Runic divination, use of the runes, but it's more than just the runes in the form of divination. There is this ongoing struggle for folks that want to use the runes in a literary form, writing words, names, phrases, things of that nature, right? And the ongoing quote unquote problem that exists is that the runic characters, the runic alphabets that are in existence now are were for languages that are not modern English. So how do you write modern English in a runic system that those characters were not intended to be written in? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what I found recently was somebody, and he's a pretty reputable contributor in the heathen space. He's written a book called The Eagle's Mead, I think is the name of the book. But he has developed what I believe he's called is the American Uthark. It is a he created the system himself with inspiration from like Elder Futhark and Anglo-Saxon Futhork runes. But it is entirely intended to have people that want to put their children's names or write a phrase or something in American English without having to figure out, well, which Elder Futhark rune do I use? Which Anglo-Saxon rune do I use? Right. Oh, now I can go to this American Futhark system and I've got something that'll work. There's It's very new. Like I literally just came across it the other day, and already like I saw some thing somebody mentioned where it was like, I don't know how to feel about this. This is a huge, I think the words that they used was, this is a huge dedication to their UPG. I don't know if you know the term that I'm using, UPG, the unverified personal gnosis. You know? But what does, you know, we talk about things like animism, right? You say it, your view was that it's like the earliest first form of, you know, spirituality or religion, maybe. I forget the words you use, but is that it was like, that was the basis of it. It was animism. You know, there was this connection between our spirit and the spirit around in the land and in everything. And then over time, we have these constructed, organized versions of spirituality. And what does this higher deity get named, right? We got to put a name to them. Was it a masculine deity? Was it a feminine power, right? And we put these, you know, humans, I mean, put names to these things over the centuries and over the millennia. And so what I've come back to several times over my life is religion started as UPG for somebody. And they just convinced enough people to kind of go along with it. And then it became a thing, right? And absolutely. Next thing you know, everybody's doing it. Interesting thing to think about.
Profound. And maybe that speaks to the power of memes itself, if you want to call UPG a meme or a message a meme. If you mind if I veer the conversation a little bit?
All right. Go for it. Yeah.
I started a subreddit called Cyberdelinot. If you go to Reddit, it still exists. It's not under my control anymore, but it is definitely still there. And it was all done through the power of memes. It was all done through the use of the image or the whiff of technomancy. Just trying to show you that it was possible to do this kind of stuff, to put human intention and human will into a goal on the internet and to make it come about. And I had some very important experiences with that subreddit in particular.
Really?
I was cursed. I was hacked. I was sent to Mexico. I almost didn't have enough money to come back. It was I pissed some people off and I made some enemies, but it was quite an experience using the power of memes.
Yeah, dude, that's intense, man. Because, like, you know, I know you're not the first person probably to have heard this, and I'm not the one that coined this, but I've seen, you know, and I think, you know, if you put text to an image, does that constitute a meme? Does text on an image, is that like a textbook definition of meme? I don't know. It could be, because a lot of images that have text on them are classified as memes. But point being, there's this meme, right, or this graphic that's gone around talking about the word spelling, all right, and how when we anyway, so the meme, like, what spelling is, and spelling is like what we talk about in magic, right? Well, casting a spell and the connotation with what our words can do. Our words have power. When you say things, when you even write things, when you maybe put words on a picture, that is an extension of the power of the written word, the spoken word, and how we, as doing such things, are, in a sense, casting spells. You know? And it seems like there's this connection between that and the whole meme thing that we're talking about, right? And just the kind of power that it has. It's so influential now, especially. I mean, people grab at everything or almost anything that they see on the internet and run with it, you know, without even trying to validate it or come up with any reasoning behind it. They're like, well, I read it on the internet, so it must be true. You know?
I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me, yeah. I guess my experience with memes has been very positive and very powerful. I know there are some abuses of memes that you could say others engage in.
People have been made famous from memes, man. Like, they, you know, some podunk town in the middle of nowhere. Next thing you know, they get made a meme out of, and now they're like, they've gone viral. Sorry to interrupt you, but it's just a funny thing to think of there. But go ahead. Sorry.
No worries. I think we're on the same page, and we're headed to the same point right there. So,
yeah. I don't think I've ever been made. Have you ever been made a meme of?
That's a fair question. I don't think so. Maybe, but I doubt it.
Never know, right? Could be somewhere out there. Could have been in Mexico. Never know. That meme could have taken you there, and you're famous in Guadalajara or Juarez or something. Who knows?
Could be.
But yeah, man. You know, and one of the things too is like talking about like I like technomancy. I like cybermancy. I like putting names to these things because I've never heard those terms coined before. Maybe that's a you thing that now we're hearing for the first time. I'm not sure. I haven't listened to like one of the shows that you were on with Layman. I don't know if it got mentioned during that before, but it's a great, I think, idea to put a name to these things. Good friend of mine is he's part of our like heathen group here in Tennessee, but he came up with a system like 20 some years ago that just recently had a name put to it called agromancy.
Interesting.
And it has to do with mandalic formulas. Like, so like he has a whole written system. He has like an alphabet, numbers, symbols, a card deck or different card decks. So there's divinatory uses for it, but he's got, you know, seasons and calendar and stuff, a whole system built around this thing, but it's very agriculturally based. It's in like agro, you know, so techno and agro, I mean, you're talking about almost polar opposites of things, but the manipulation, the working of these things we're hearing in the suffix, the ending of the word. And I was going somewhere with that. But yeah, the use of technology for things alongside, you know, shamanic and animistic practices. I mentioned earlier about the misuse or the abuse of such things, you know, people like, oh, let me just download this app and let me, you know, randomly generate a rune reading for the day, you know, like that seems a bit haphazard. It seems a bit like, I don't know, like there's a disconnect with what the truth is behind it. Like, I'll just let this thing do it for me without having put in the work to learn what these symbols or what these things actually are. I guess that's kind of why I mentioned before, like the danger or the trap of letting the technology aspect or the AI aspect of things kind of take over, and we lose that human element to it in a way. I don't know.
I can relate to that. I think there's some value to that kind of thinking for sure. I mean, if you're not gonna do the work, if you're not gonna build the foundation of knowledge, you're not gonna be able to use the tools anyways or understand the real outcomes that they're presenting.
Yeah, because how good can the AI get, right? Well, the AI is as good as the information that it's fed, right?
Absolutely.
So without the human part, it runs into a dead end. You kind of hit a brick wall with it. Or does it eventually become self-aware and it's Skynet and it's Cyberdyne and it's, you know, Terminator, you know, and they take over, and next thing you know, it's John Connor all over again. I'm being a bit facetious now. That's just the nature of the show. We go down those funny rabbit holes. So what else? We got technology for like divination. What other things have you seen its benefit in use cases for that you're excited about sharing with everybody?
Prayer is another big one. Altered states of consciousness and prayer. Just a very simple example, binaural beats. Those are very widely available, and they are I think in my observations, they are seen as effective. They seem to have an effect on a lot of people. So I'm just kind of trying to put some authority to that statement that it is possible to use digital technologies to alter your consciousness. There are new technologies that are coming out that use flashing lights and the symmetry between sound and visual effects. That's a very interesting playground, I guess you could say. But if you really want to get down into the depths of what you can do today, it is like binaural beats and the ability to alter your consciousness very simply and pray. And that's something I use every day. It's something that I use to great effect. I use particular videos on YouTube that have special attention put to correlating the video effects with the audio effects, and
it makes,
so you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you,
I think like so like one of the things that I think about when you're saying like the binaural beats, like I mean in shamanism the drum is a pivotal instrument for carrying your spirit along a journey or aiding somebody else in their journey, you know. I use the drum. Well, there's some of it that you can see over here on the side. It's a bit out of frame, but there's a big 38-inch goat skin drum over here in the back. There's a 12-inch bison skin drum, you know, and these are all tools and implements that are and have been used in ceremony and in private ritual, in group ritual, you know, and every time I just speaking recently, I had a guy who my wife's known since high school. They've been friends for many, many years. But me and him have gotten kind of close. We're becoming friends and building a relationship together, him and I. And he had never experienced what it was like to have a drum session, just maybe listen to music in the background, but drum along with it, or have a rhythm or something and just drum along with it. And it was like a few minutes long. And he was like, wow, that was profound. And he's not the type of person that, at least from in my limited relationship with him, is a overly religious or overly spiritual person. But the rhythmic medicine that the drum offers, was profound for him. Yeah, like he felt something. You know, he's like, I've never felt anything like this before. And so in a similar way, yes, there's, you know, modern technology can kind of replicate that through that binaural beat, through those even auditory and visual combinations, you know, having those like kaleidoscope type things or those it makes me think of the you're a developer, right?
Yes, sir.
And so remember the old Windows, like when you open up the Windows Media Player back in the day and the songs that would play, they had those like vibrating like lights. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. They would make an effect to like a peak in the music or something.
Yeah. You know? So yeah, but like now here we are, you know, all these years later, and they've really like aced that one, but you know, people get into it pretty heavily. But yeah, I know exactly. At least I think that's what we're talking about. I hope I'm on the same page with you here. I could have gone off into totally I got left field on that one, but yeah, I think we're on the same page.
And it's like taking that kind of technology and frankly putting it on steroids in the future. Not literally steroids, but making it much more powerful and much more effective. And that has been kind of one of my personal pet projects that I've kept alive in the back of my mind for a long time that I've wanted to start. I don't have the skills yet to make AI on my own. I can use an API through an AI platform and build something that way. That's no problem. But to build an AI from scratch on my own is still out of my skill set. But when I am further down my developer journey, building something like that is one of my motivations, because it's been so powerful in my life, that kind of technology, that kind of media, more importantly. It's handmade, or it is manually made by dragging and dropping, of course, with a video editor. But it is still, regardless, it has still been so profound in my life. You can find a playlist of it on my YouTube channel. My favorite edits, those are the videos, the specific videos that I find to be most effective in altering my state of consciousness and helping me enter a state of gnosis that I use on a regular basis for both programming, thinking, processing, emotions, all sorts of things. And mm-hmm. I think there's a certain kind of disposition that goes really well with this. With this kind of magic work, with this kind of energy work. And I think I might agree, if someone was to say that that's the case. I'm not certain, but really it's about using the tools that work for you is what it's about.
Yeah. Right. When you say disposition, meaning, you know, what works for one may not work for the other.
Absolutely.
Or work for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what's also interesting is, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things already so far, and one of them being, you know, plant medicine and utilizing the various tools that are available to whatever degree to help us reach, a stage or a point in our spirituality to be able to be more in tune with stuff like this. I feel like at some point when you approach it with a degree of piety, with a degree of sacredness, like realizing what these things are sacred, you know, and approaching it with piety like that it's not like, oh, I need to go and experience that thing to gain the effects of it. Case in point, I've had, you know, moments where, whether it was through sleep or just through, you know, quiet contemplation or meditation, where, you know, the sound in itself or the rhythm of something in itself was enough to kind of carry me to a place of an altered state of consciousness that plant medicine had done for me before. Maybe not to the same degree or at the same level, but there was a touch of that, and it was really inspiring for me to realize, like, man, it's there all around us. What your sensitivity is, again, your disposition to these types of things. I mean, it's there. It's just how receptive are we to this? What have we done to allow ourselves to be connected in that sort of way? You know,
it takes
work, but
yes, it does. It takes work for honest results. It takes work for the sincere soul to mature oneself, if that's your path, or to help a community, if you're a shaman, etc. It definitely takes work. It takes intention too, and it takes humility. Maybe is another word to use in addition to piety, humility and gratitude. That is maybe the soul of all, in my opinion. If you are grateful for what you are experiencing, regardless, essentially, you will find a way to better circumstances, or you will enjoy what you have in front of you. But gratitude, humility, piety, those kinds of words are the secret ingredients to, I think, to real growth and real personal paganism, I guess is the word I could use. Personal spiritual experiences that are substantial and that change you as a person, or that improve you, that operating system upgrade that we talked about earlier.
100%. I'm curious. I love these types of conversations because it touches a nerve for me. It hits home for me in a lot of different ways. Because even though I don't know you very well, there's a degree of commonality with some things. Would you be comfortable with sharing, like the most profound experience you had? Outside of what somebody might consider a awakening, right? Because we could always probably find ourselves reflecting on the time or the place in our life where we did a thing, consumed something, experienced something, right? And that was like the moment where it was, right? We that was our time of awakening, right? And but any time after that that really stands out to you, that was like really influential or really pivotal for you in your growth as a person, as a pagan, anything that stands out in your mind that you'd like to share with people? You can go as, you know, granular or not. It's just a question I thought would be interesting to dive into.
I'm happy to share. I've had a number of very serious encounters with spirit and with healing over the last 5 years. The first one was something aligned to a poltergeist. I was dancing in my garage, and the door on to the outside of the door, the door to the outside world wanted to get its hinges ripped open, it felt like. There was something trying to obliterate and spread the material that made the door 1,000 feet in every direction. And I couldn't find, there were no motion lights turned on that were right above the door. And there was no indication that it was anything like wind. So there was that. But probably even more substantially was my battle with alcohol was very serious and very, it looked like it was going to be the way I was going to end my life in the long run was with alcoholism. But I was one night I was lying in bed. I was crying. I was sick and tired of battling alcohol. And in a moment of knowing, my cat comes up. And this is when I realized that shamanism and animism and the spirit within everything is very real. My cat comes and perches on my chest when I'm laying in bed, and I could feel something in my brain click. And I, the next day, and still to this day, no longer have a problem with alcohol. I was given a gift from my cat, from spirit, I think, from some sort of friendship that we have, that my cat and I have. I was given a cure for my alcoholism because I was pretty sick of it. I was pretty done with it. And the second experience in particular, the first one is sort of just like a party trick that you can talk to anyone about. But the second mm-hmm. experience, very personal, very, very real. And I could feel in my awareness the desire to drink just kind of go away. It's still there. I enjoy alcohol, but I don't drink alcohol. I don't drink because it's no longer a priority of mine after that night in particular. And wow. I don't
just know, like that.
After a lot of suffering. Yes. After very,
oh, yeah.
after some very intense suffering and a true desire to stop, a true desire to be clean, but needing help to get sober from alcohol. My cat for some reason knew exactly what to do, and I will never be the same. It was, wow. It was that moment that I kind of realized, there is something very true to what I'm engaging in. This is very, very real. And the ability to grow, I think, ultimately boils down to a choice. I think not all the time help is necessary. And believe me when I say that I understand that help is necessary. I take medication every day for my own circumstances. But truly choosing to heal, the universe will in some major ways open those opportunities for you to walk through on your own. I'm saying a mouthful, and I don't mean to say anything that is untrue or offensive to anyone, but those are my experiences. And
yeah, man, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I think that'll resonate with a lot of folks. It does with me. You know, I was talking with a guy on one of the last couple of episodes here. We were talking about mycorrhizal networks, right? Mycelium, and understanding the like I think I said it on that episode too. I'm like, it's crazy that season 5 of this podcast has had in some form or fashion in almost every episode up to this point. I think this is like the 14th episode of the season where like this topic has either been a segment of this of the episode or the main part of the episode, but to the degree that understanding what this network does, right? When a tree in the forest is cut down, it's sending signals that there's a wound. And everything that's the mycorrhizal network, the mycelium network, that is a vast, like microscopic, you can't see with the naked eye, network of communication is sending healing to this damaged tree, because one of our neighbors, one of our people is hurt, is suffering. The tree's been cut down, right? So there are these healing signals that are being sent to try to regrow and heal. And when I hear your story about this point where you reached with alcoholism and your cat was aware of something and sat on your chest, was connected with you in a very physical way, in a very primal way, to send the healing that was needed to this damaged part. There was healing that was needed. There was a damage that was there, right? And how we are connected with spirit in the ways, like, I mean, my wife sometimes, like, you know, we have dogs, we have three dogs, and there are times when her or I or one of us or both of us sometimes are going through some things, and one of the dogs or both of the dogs or three of the dogs even will approach us, you know, and be close to us and want to give comfort, that whole cuddling thing. There is healing in that. There is there's folklore around that too. I saw something recently where, like, the story was, you know, I forget where exactly the folklore comes from, but you know, it was around this if the animal was sick, then the only way to cure the sickness of the animal was to embrace it. And that's a loose, like, translation or recollection of it. But the spirit behind it was that there was this hug that was sort of needed, right? There was this connection, physical connection between the two to allow that healing to take place. And I hear your story and I think of the mycorrhizal network, mycelium, and how when one part of the system is damaged, then things come and finds a way to get there to try and heal it, to repair this damage. Man, if that doesn't resonate, I don't know what will, man. That's that's wild. Think about that. You know, and it's a cat, right? Totally different species, totally different creature, yet connected with you. Realized, hey, this person, this he needs help. Let me give what help I can. You know, absolutely. You still had to do the work. You still had to go through the suffering. You still had to go through the whole ordeal of it, but you had help, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. It's real. And that's the message that I'd like to get across, is that this stuff is very real. Another subjective storyteller is saying it is real. There are plenty of us saying that it is real. Science may disagree, but that's okay. I think
give
science,
it time.
Absolutely. That's the thing, isn't it? Just give it time and it will catch up. It will, you know, absolutely catch up.
And that's the funny thing. I know paganism and stuff is, you know, at least with some of what I get exposed to in heathenry. And it's probably, again, because of the focus that I have in my spirituality and being not like 100% hardcore reconstructionist with things, but having a kind of a soft spot towards reconstructionism, you know, going back to the historical sides of things and finding, well, how did the ancient peoples do it? And trying to reconstruct it in modern times. You know, here we are talking about technomancy, cybermancy, these things of finding ways of practicing these old religions, these old ways in modern times, and leveraging and utilizing the modern advancement of our nature to adapt, to find solutions to things. You know, there's a reason why we are how we are now as a species, as humanity. We've done the things. We've put in that work. And inherited a lot of information from past generations. You know, the reason why AI didn't exist 100 years ago, well, we weren't there yet as a species. We were working towards it, right? We were inventing things like the car, right? Or whatever, you know, the airplane, things like that, right? Well, for the time, it was an advancement. And now here we are, you know, talking about all these things about artificial intelligence and, you know, leveraging it for things. I feel like it's a delicate dance that we engage in with stuff like this, you know, especially being connected to these old ways, being connected to these roots, and not trying to become not trying to grow roots out of the sky just because we can, you know what I mean? I can do it. Should you? It makes me think of the meme, right? Or the what was the Jurassic Park where, you know, your scientists, you know, took all this time thinking of whether they could do this, and stopped or failed to think whether they should. You know what I'm talking about? That scene from Jurassic Park where he's like, Jeff Goldblum, Daddy Goldblum. But yeah, so man, so prayer, that's an interesting one. I guess when you say prayer earlier, we're talking about AI and all that. You're talking about prayer in the sense of like giving an oration or having AI help with the oration, or that is that, is that what you meant, or do you want to?
I don't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I was trying to figure out what you meant by that. But when I hear prayer, it's this, you know, orating things to the deities. So
for me, it's always been very silent and personal. I do it always in private, and it's really about, when it comes to AI, it's about finding the message that I want to deliver ahead of time, and kind of getting an assistance with contextualizing what I want to do. Brainstorming, that's a big thing with AI for me and in my prayer. But when it comes to the actual delivery of the prayer or the experience of the prayer, it's always private and solo for me, because I find that's the most, in my world, the most sincere and the most effective is personal, private prayer.
Definitely. Yeah, it should be something that comes from the heart. I agree with that, you know. A lot of people want to get told what to do or how to do it, right? Maybe that comes from previous religious experiences where they go to a building, they go to a place, they sit in front of a man or a woman, and they get told what to believe and how to believe it. So when they discover a bit more of a free thinking path, they think, well, I still need to have somebody tell me how, when, where, why, right? All these things. And a lot of it comes back to, well, what do you feel? And it's interesting because I feel like why does the question exist? Why do people ask these things? Because they don't know how to think. They don't know how to feel. You know, they haven't had experience. They haven't reached that point of knowing they can do it themselves. It's in them. It's already there. You know,
absolutely. That's that missing knowledge that you're talking about is very important, and perhaps more prevalent than we want to think. The not knowing how to think, or not knowing how to feel, or not knowing how to decide even for oneself. I struggled with that for a long time during my awakening, my earliest phases of awakening. How to even have a social conversation. I was very isolated growing up, and it was a very different kind of childhood than most I would think you could say. So for me, it was having to figure things out one thing at a time. And part of that is figuring out how to have a good time, how to pray, how to think, how to have an internal monologue. That was a personal development of mine that came about through a lot of hard work. So I think what you're talking about is very important.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, first of all, you know, I'm connected with you right now to be able to talk about your take on it, that you're going in a direction, you know, and finding use through AI and other technologies and, you know, being able to leverage it in a way that seems beneficial, not just to you, but to others that you've connected with. So that's a fascinating thing for me to learn about, that there's this opportunity out here. Is there a way for people that are hearing this or watching this now, if this strikes a chord for them and they want to kind of tap into that, if they're feeling like, man, I was thinking this whole time, I didn't realize there was a community, or I didn't realize that there were people out here that thought like this, is there any way for them to connect with you or find a place to explore this themselves some more? Or what would you suggest if not? But yeah, feel free to expound on that if you will.
For sure. There is a resource. I will do a very quick Google search, Technomancy book. Just give me 1 second here. One Technomancy book online. The person who made it is, I think, the forerunner of all of this. What is this? Technomancer's Handbook. If you Google Technomancy Handbook, you will find a free, pretty definitive guide, or technomancy101.com. That's it right there. Technomancy101.com. That is the resource that convinced me to create the CyberDelenaut subreddit, that if someone was going to put this much effort into technomancy, I would take it seriously too. So if you want to learn more about technomancy from a resource that I have no invested interest in whatsoever, type technomancy 101 into Google and check it out for yourself and figure it out if that's something that you want to participate in. Now, if you want to contact me, you can just find me on LinkedIn or YouTube. Those are the easiest ways to communicate with me. But to really dive into technomancy, read a simple overview, which is the resource that I think started modern technomancy, because technomancy has been around since the 90s, really chaos magic in the 90s and 80s when the internet started. But
yeah. That's crazy, man. I had no idea that. I mean, I heard the first term, the first I've heard the term was literally today. Probably others too, but maybe it's just, it was a thing and I didn't know that there was a name to it. So live and learn, but that's crazy. It's been around for that long.
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Absolutely. You can find a reference to a techno pagan on Buffy the Vampire Slayer from like 1995 or something like that.
I hear techno this and techno that, you know, and there was a, going back to the meme thing, remember Techno Viking?
I do remember Techno Viking.
Big dude just dancing all techno in the street, just kind of doing his thing.
Yeah, for sure.
All menacingly, you know, and whatever. Yeah. Like living at a rave.
Some pretty intense dancing.
Dude, this has been super fun. I've learned a lot. And I hope everybody else has too. I think that this has been one of the most exciting conversations I've had on this podcast. You know, I'm glad you reached out. Anything else that you want to share with the people before we sign off? And when we do sign off, don't go anywhere, because I'll touch base with you briefly offline, as I do with all of my guests. But I think we've really covered a good. So, I mean, we've covered a lot of good bases, I think, tonight for me, this afternoon for you. But yeah, anything else you want to share with the folks, or parting words or anything like that?
Sure. It's that if you are interested in technology and magic, that there is a growing community of people out there, and just use a search engine. I don't mean to belittle any efforts that you've made already, but use a search engine to find Technomancy group or Technomancy resource, and you'll find information, and that will lead you wherever you want to go.
Right. Don't be afraid to explore a bit.
That's basically,
I think that's one of the things too, is going back to like people asking, well, how should I do this? Why, you know, where should I go? Well, go wherever you want to go, I guess. Like, explore things yourself. Learn for yourself. There's going to be things that you find that are going to fit for you. There's going to be things that you find that aren't going to fit for you. And that's part of the experience, right? That's part of the learning. That's part of the discovery. It's get into it all if you want. Just don't be afraid.
Absolutely. Be curious.
Be curious. Yes. Yeah. Well, Brett, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining me today. And for everybody that's watching, listening, right, there's going to be links to Brett's LinkedIn and YouTube channel in the video description of this podcast for all you Patreon viewers, and in the show notes for everybody else on the audio platforms. So do be sure to, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, check out down there for ways that you can support not just myself, but Brett here, right? He may not have a platform per se, but he does put himself out here and has a passion. So you might be able to connect and learn some things together, which is great. So thank you, Brett, for being my guest on this week's episode. It's been an honor, and I had a really good time talking with you.
Thank you, Jesse. It's been a great time. I felt like we had a pretty sincere dialogue, a pretty raw dialogue about some things that matter, at least in our opinions, they matter. So I appreciate that. It's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. All right, everybody. Well, this has been another exciting episode of the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. If you did like it, upvote it, share it, do all the things that show your support in any way that you can. All of my information is linked down below or over here, wherever you see it in your platform that you're catching this on. So check it all out. Show your support in any way that you can. And thank you again, Brett, for being my guest this week. Until we all talk to each other again, may the gods continue to notice you, and may your ancestors smile upon you. See you in the next one.